Scripture reading tonight will be from Mark chapter 16, verse 15. He said to them, "Go into all the world and preach the good news to all creation."
He said to them, Christians, children of God, go into all of the world, teach lost people. Commission that every one of us has. And God in his wisdom only said, teach the lost, and he will give the increase. And to all of the world, that doesn't take anything away from local evangelism, national evangelism, for those in international evangelism, encompass all of teaching the world. Not everyone is able to travel to all of these places to teach the gospel. But all who would like to can go to all of these places to teach the gospel. So God blessed others who could give and could support those who could be in other places of the world. Teach the gospel. Kent and Rachel O'Donnell from Palmerston North, New Zealand, are your hands, your feet, your tongue in teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ to the people in New Zealand. And it is a blessing that we can have them with us tonight. We've been engaged in evangelism with them for many years and appreciate the work that they're doing. And I do not want to take away from your time. I give you Kent O'Donnell.
Certainly is great to be here tonight. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and share our work to you. And we really are thankful for the Maryville congregation. I believe you have been with us from the beginning of our work, or at least when I started out the work. I think it was back in 1997 when I returned back to New Zealand. And so it's getting close on 20 years that you've played a part in our work in New Zealand. And so we're very, very thankful that you are with us in this work. And I like what Brother Bill said, where your hands and feet and mouths in New Zealand, that you play a part in that. And you're working through us there in New Zealand. I'm not going to spend too much time on this first slide. It's more kind of a way to maybe translate some of the things that we might say that are a bit different to what you might be used to. So I'm going to get right on into the next part of the presentation. I want to do a little bit of imitation of what Paul would do. He would go out on his missionary journeys and he would come back to his home congregation in Antioch. They would gather the congregation together and they would share the good things that God had been able to do through them in their work. And that's what I want to do today. Of course, this isn't necessarily our home congregation, but you support us in our work. And so it's only good and right for us to come and give you a report on what God has done through us in our work in New Zealand. This is a map of our country and also where we are located in the world. You will see that we're not too far away from Australia. I'm not sure if it's, you see the circle around there. We're about, I think it's 1,100 kilometres away from Australia. It takes about 13 hours to fly from the top of New Zealand up to LA, and that's just one of the flights. That's the longest one, but it was about a 30-hour day for us when we left earlier on in the month. New Zealand has a population of 4.6 million, and Palmerston North, where Rachel and I and the family live and work, is down this side. Is there on the map, you can just see the red dot, and so we're about a quarter of the way up on the North Island. New Zealand is a very beautiful country. A lot of people refer to it as being God's zone. They believe that God paid special extra attention to our country, and perhaps he did. We have a little bit of everything. We've got mountains, hills, lakes, rivers. You know, more than around about 30 or 50 kilometres away from a beach, no matter where you are in New Zealand. And we really love some of the scenic areas of our country. And a lot of people are motivated to come to New Zealand because of its scenery. We also have several native animals, most of which are native birds. Our national, our national mascot is the kiwi in the top corner there. New Zealanders are often referred to as being kiwis. The notable aspect of the bird there is the large egg, about a third of the size of the mother kiwi. On some occasions, the male kiwis can be seen praying prayers of thanks to God that they are males. They don't have to deal with an egg of that proportion. But we're proud of that little bird. We also have other native animals. We've got a native snail, got a native dolphin. We have a native lizard called a tuatara. We've got, there used to be three species of bat in New Zealand. It's dwindled down to two species now. But we also have a grasshopper-like insect called a wetter. And those unfortunate New Zealanders who have found them in their boots, or sometimes even in their beds, get a bit of a rude awakening. Not really going to do you much damage, but they are kind of ferocious looking, which kind of scares the pants off you sometimes. New Zealand is well known for its farming and produce. You can grow anything subtropical in New Zealand, and so a lot of our fruit and vegetables are exported to other countries. I dare say if you were to go to your local supermarket, you will probably find some New Zealand apples being sold there. We're getting more and more well known for our dairy products, our dairy farms, and so we export a lot of milk and cheese and butter. New Zealand used to be more well known for its sheep and lamb meat and wool industry. That has since gone through, I guess, a relative downturn, but it is still quite popular in New Zealand and brings in a fair bit of export money for us. One thing that New Zealand is becoming more and more noted for is its honey, particularly the manuka honey. The manuka tree is a tree that is native to New Zealand, and the honey that is produced from that has some very good healthful properties, and a lot of people use it for those health benefits. My older brother Todd is actually a beekeeper, and he produces a lot of this manuka honey, and he likes to tell people that it's the only biblical breakfast spread. And so if you want to be biblical, you've got to have honey on your toast in the morning to be a good Christian. But we have a lot of this kind of industry of the, I guess, the produce in New Zealand. We do have a lot of famous New Zealanders. A lot of them, I guess, are not quite as well known in their in a lot of places, but at least they're world famous in New Zealand, at least. But our most notable individual is probably Sir Edmund Hillary. And he was the man who first climbed Mount Everest. Beside him is a lady by the name of Kate Shepherd. She is what would be known as, she was a suffragette who did a lot of work for equal rights for ladies. And through her efforts and the efforts of others, she achieved, the notoriety of New Zealand being the first modern place, a modern country to have the woman's vote when it came to political matters. Ernest Rutherford was a New Zealander, and he was the man who first split the atom. He also discovered and named the proton, and he led the research which discovered and named the neutron. A man by the name of Bill Hamilton was another New Zealander who, while he didn't invent the jet engine for the speedboat engine, he developed it to such a degree that it became so much more user-friendly that he's often accredited as being the inventor of it. One that I only recently discovered in putting this presentation together was Colin Murdoch. Those of you who might be diabetics or use plastic disposable syringes on a regular basis have him to thank. He invented the plastic disposable syringe. He also invented the tranquilizer gun, believe it or not. Next to him is a lady by the name of Valerie Adams. She is a world-renowned shot putter. She is the current and four-time world champion of the shot put, and also the current and two-time Olympic champion. She went through 50 world competitions straight without being defeated, until just recently when she did some damage to her shoulder, and she's had to have surgery and hasn't quite competed to her optimum of late. Perhaps many of you here are familiar with Peter Jackson. If you've seen The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit movies, he was the writer, director and producer of those movies. And if you've seen them, you've seen a lot of the, scenic aspects of our country as well. Some of our major cities would be Auckland. Now, Auckland is near the top of the North Island. It's the most populous city. It has a third of our population is contained in that small area of Auckland. Beside that on the screen is Wellington. Wellington is the capital city of New Zealand, located at the bottom of the North Island. Both Rachel and I were originally born and raised in that city. Below there on the screen is Christchurch. Christchurch used to be our third largest city. It has dwindled in population in recent years because of the major earthquakes that were had. Almost 300 individuals died in those earthquakes, and a lot of the buildings that you see in that picture are no longer standing. In fact, you'll see that cathedral here in the middle, that's no longer there. The earthquake did so much damage they had to destroy or take away what was left. Along the bottom there beside Christchurch is Queenstown. Queenstown is a very beautiful location. It's a tourist mecca. A lot of people will go there to ski, to do water sports and other adventure activities. It's a very, very picturesque part of the country. And that brings us to Palmerston North itself, where Rachel and I work with the church there. Palmerston North has a population of just over 80,000 individuals. One of the more noticeable aspects of the country, or of the city, are the wind turbines that you'll see there in the top corner. And they're actually situated on the back hills, right at the back there of the city. And they generate enough power to, enough electricity to power about between 20 to 30,000 homes. And our local rugby team are actually called the Turbos after those wind turbines. We also have a university in the city called Massey University. And we've been trying our best to get a presence there on campus. It's been quite difficult for us to be able to get a foot in the door, but there's been some religious resistance to us having a presence there. But hopefully sometime in the future we'll be able to get in there and have some kind of teaching classes or some kind of presence of some kind. This is our meeting place in Palmerston. You'll see there the main auditorium. In the background, you're going to see a very small part of our fellowship area and our Bible class, where we have our Bible classes, and we will eat meals together and have fellowship activities. We've really tried in recent years to kind of spruce up the appearance of the of our buildings, to paint the outside, to paint the inside, and just to make it look a lot more presentable. And a lot of the brethren have really done that, done the work themselves. Other than that, the new sign, the local brethren have done the work themselves to make it a bit more presentable and a bit more beautiful on the outside and on the inside too. Down below is the inside of our auditorium, and then to the right is a sign or a wall sign that was put up inside our fellowship room. As the scripture reading said, we have a strong external focus to our work, and I want to start talking about that now. And as Jesus said, look, I want you to go into all the world and to preach the gospel. Well, certainly New Zealand is part of the world, and Palmerston North, New Zealand is our part of the world, and we want to make sure that we're trying to get the gospel out into our community. And hopefully that's a mission that you have here, that it's not just helping those who are in other countries and other places, but you have a focus on your external work in the Maryville community. What I want to do is to show you some of the approaches that we use in our evangelism in New Zealand. One of the things that we can do on a regular basis in New Zealand is called letterboxing. Not litterboxing, as some people think I'm saying, but mailboxing is probably more closer to what you would say. This is where we go from house to house, and we will place leaflets and cards and invites into people's mailboxes. Now, there may be some issues for you to be able to do that over here in New Zealand. It's perfectly legal, and we can do that as often as we like. And to date, we have delivered over 29,000 pieces of material on different occasions throughout the city. Something else that we do as often as we can is door knocking. And I realise that a lot of people have a bad impression of door knocking. Oh, we don't want to do door knocking. It's not effective. We tried it once and it didn't work. And people sort of, the door knocking has a bad name, but don't knock it until you've tried it. Did you get it? Don't knock it too far. It's something that I think it's a part of evangelism that is really neglected, and it's something that's kind of, people have pushed it to the wayside, and it's not done as often as I believe it ought to be done. I can tell you now, most likely I wouldn't be a Christian if it wasn't for door knocking. My grandparents were reached through door knocking, and you know, if some of the other family members are anything to go by, I probably wouldn't be a Christian. And so I'm very pro door knocking, mainly because my soul's very thankful for it. Not only that, but it was something that the early church practiced. The apostles, the first century Christians, went from house to house knocking on doors and sharing the gospel and preaching Jesus. And so if they thought that it was a good policy or a good method of getting the gospel to the community, then you know, we ought to follow in their footsteps. And I would encourage all congregations to maybe revisit doing some of that in your own communities. And it's not something that is necessarily quick progress. You don't get numbers quickly, but what we've found is that you will speak to people at the door that chances are you will never speak to in other environments. These are not the people that you're going to meet at work. These are not the people that you're generally going to meet at school or on the sports field or other activities. Generally, these people, that the only chance you're going to have to speak to these people is at their door at their home. And so this is another good reason for going out there and doing that. We have really increased our community benevolence and trying to help out those in the community with aid and assistance. We will give grocery bags to those who are needing grocery assistance in that way. We make meals for sick individuals, for those who might be new parents who've got a new baby on the scene, that a meal would be helpful. We have really tried to look for other opportunities to help new mothers. We will, well, at least the ladies will go and babysit the children and give the mothers a bit of time to have a break themselves. They can go and have a coffee or go and do some shopping without having to deal with their kids, which sometimes makes it harder. We have a meeting during the week where mothers can come together at the church building and the kids can play, and so they can the mothers can talk and chat and have a good time there. We offer limited financial assistance, particularly to those who are within the congregation, but where there are needs outside the congregations, we'll also consider helping individuals financially outside of the local church. You'll see in the picture there was where the youth were really got involved in this by putting together care packages for the cancer patients at the local cancer ward. And they delivered these care packages, and boy, the recipients of those were so very thankful, and we received phone calls and cards of appreciation and a letter from the Cancer Society just thanking us for that. And I dare say this will be something that we will do again in the not too distant future. We have gospel meetings and Bible seminars on a regular basis. We try to have at least one or two every year. And we'll have guest speakers come in who are perhaps specialised in certain areas that can cover certain topics of interest. At the top there is a man by the name of Ron Green. He's actually from Texas, and he is a professor at the university in Palmerston North. And he has a strong science background. And so he did a seminar on evolution versus creation, to which we invited the community to. Down below that was a seminar that we had on Mormonism. A man by the name of Nathan Franson, who actually works for the church, our congregation in Florida, he came over and did a three or four night seminar on that topic. He came out of Mormonism, and so he had a lot of good inside information to be able to share. Perhaps one of our more successful seminars were when we had Willie Franklin come all the way over to New Zealand, the ex-NFL player, and he has a very interesting life history and a life story that he shared. And we had almost two dozen visitors from the community came to that, and the picture of the inside of the auditorium there doesn't really show the full picture, because that's without all the kids who were over in the other room, the other house, in their classes. The place was pretty much packed when everyone was in there. And so, like I say, we try to have one or two of these every year, sometimes more, to have these speakers come and to invite the community to these sessions. We also have campaigns, which is where we will go for perhaps a 1 or 2 weeks. We will go and just straight out door knocking. Sometimes we'll do some letterboxing, depending on who's there and the numbers that we have. And we'll have help from Christian universities. Harding and Fried Haven will come over, and we'll have students come and assist us in those efforts. And earlier on in the year, we had a major door knocking campaign, which did last for 2 weeks. And we went throughout the whole city. I think we knocked on about 2,500 doors. We spoke to, I think it was close on 2,000 people. It was a lot of hard work was done. And I think that you grow in a campaign perhaps more than you would in any other area. And we would love for you to be part of our campaigns. I would love to have a representative of this congregation come to New Zealand and help us in a practical way. I know you help us financially, and we are very thankful for that. We would love for you to participate in this kind of practical way. And you can see our work firsthand. You can see the kind of people that we are trying to approach and help. And so if that sounds something that you would be really interested in, please come to me or go to Rachel, give us your details, and we'll make sure that we send you information close to the time. You might want to mark off February and March 2017. That's when we plan to have our next major campaign. And if you would like to play a part in that, let me know, and I'll send you the information. And like I say, I think that you grow in your faith in a campaign perhaps more than you would in any other aspect of evangelism. When you've got to stand at the door and try to develop the interest in someone to study the Bible, develop their interest in spiritual things, it forces you to grow. And there's also a great camaraderie that is had during a campaign with your fellow workers, and you get some wonderful connections with your fellow workers that are lifelong. And so that they're really great experiences. And you know, even if you can't come to New Zealand, if you hear of a door knocking campaign that's been held nearby, I would encourage you to play a part. I really would. You'll be helping the local congregation, and really you'll be helping yourself to a great deal as well. Whoa, go back a little bit. The ultimate goal that we would want to have in our, man, we're way further. The ultimate goal that we would have in any evangelistic approach is to set up Bible studies. We want to get people into the Word, because that's where the power of salvation lies, Romans 1 and verse 16. As you see on the board there on the screen, faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of Christ. And so we want to get people into the Word. Salvation doesn't come from us. It's going to come from them seeing it in the Scriptures. And so we want to direct people's attention to the Bible. And I would encourage you to have a Bible study tool that you use when you're sitting down with people. Yes, it's, you know, we can just slap down the Bible and start from there, but to have a systematic, orderly approach when we're studying with people, I think is important. And so I would encourage you to use some kind of Bible study tool. The tool that's on the screen there is a tool that I developed called the Seed for Truth Seekers. And it is a study tool that begins in the first sheet begins with Bible authority, or at least our religious authority, and eventually points to the fact that the New Testament is our final authority for religion today. It'll go into, once we've established our authority, it'll go into the importance of who Jesus is, that he is our only means and pathway for salvation. And then it goes into talking about the oneness of the church, that there is only one body of which Jesus is the Savior of. Then the next two sheets go on to show the identifying characteristics of that one church, that one body. We look around at our communities and there's dozens, if not hundreds, of different religious groups out there. Well, how do we know which is the right one? Well, the Bible shows identifying characteristics of the right one. And so the pink sheet shows the identifying characteristics of how the church of the Bible worshipped. And then it goes into looking at the leadership structure of the church of the Bible. The blue sheet goes into the looking at the identifying characteristics of the name that we ought to wear as individual Christians, the name that we ought to wear, or the names that are scriptural that we ought to wear as corporate bodies of the Lord's church. And then the blue study goes into looking at the identifying characteristic of the plan of salvation. What did the church of the Bible teach and practice in regard to taking someone from being lost to being saved? And once a person gets to the point of where they realize that they need to obey the gospel, we don't immediately take them to the baptistry. We take them through one more study, and that's the green one there called the Counting the Cost study. We're not quick to rush people into the baptistry without them really knowing fully what's going to be expected of them. And so in that last study, we'll do a bit of an overview of some of the things that we've already seen, but we'll also tell them, look, becoming a Christian doesn't necessarily make your life easier. In some ways, it could make it even harder. You're going to struggle with a lot more temptation. The devil's going to want you back, and he's going to hit your heart. There may be persecutions, and you may get teased by your family and your workmates. So you may get given a hard time. And so we don't want to soft soap people into Christianity. We want them to see what it's going to be like, and you know, there may be difficulties along the way. At the same time, however, we're also trying to tell people that, look, the Christian life is worth it. It's worth the struggle. It's worth the fight, because at the end of the day, the reward in heaven will make it all worthwhile. And so we don't want to sort of completely talk people out of it, but we want to show them what they're going to be up against, but also show them that there's a home in heaven awaiting them if they'll be faithful. We do have other tools that we have available. Often these tools come as the needs arise. When you're studying with someone, they'll come up with a question of a doctrinal matter, and sometimes we have to create brand new studies to deal with those questions. And so we have evidence-based studies on the likes of archaeology, scientific foreknowledge in the Bible, the medical accuracy that's in the Bible. I recently had to put together a study on the first day of the week. I was studying with someone who was wanting to sort of leaning towards the Sabbath. And so I developed a study that showed that we can have confidence that the first day of the week is the day that we ought to be observing as our special day as Christians. Another study on original sin had to deal with that with a lady. And so these tools that we develop are very helpful for our work, and we can use them for other means. By the way, if you want to have copies of these studies, I am more than happy to give them to you. Give me your email or get Rachel to write them down, and I'll send you digital copies of these studies. If you think that they're helpful or be usable here in Maryville or in your own personal work, then you're more than welcome to use them. Let me know and I'll send them to you. We do also offer Bible correspondence courses. In my opinion, they're not that effective in New Zealand. I know of anyone who's gone all the way to obedience through correspondence courses in New Zealand. But you know, we still offer them if they're requested and make them available. The ultimate result that we like to see happen, of course, is that people will come to the obedience of the faith. We don't want just to create faith in people, we want them to obey the faith. And that's what Paul wanted to achieve in his work, that's what we want to achieve. And In New Zealand, it's no easy task. It's quite difficult to do that. As this chart would illustrate, as far as trying to find people who are religiously interested, they're getting less and less easy to find. Back in 1991, 70% of the population claimed some kind of Christian affiliation. I'm using the term Christian very loosely there. It would include those who would be of a denominational persuasion. Only 20% claim to have a affiliation to no religion whatsoever. You can see the steady decline in those who claim some form of Christianity and the steady increase of those who are becoming more and more non-religious, or I guess irreligious. If the trend continues in 2017, we're going to begin to be outnumbered. They're going to be of the higher figure. And 2018 and 2023 are kind of projections based upon the current trends. And so soon we're going to be in the minority. Not only that, quite concerning, even though they are of a comparatively small number, those of Eastern New Age religions have grown by close on 75% in the last 12 years. Perhaps a little bit more concerning is those of the Muslim persuasion have grown 95% in the last 12 years. Thankfully, they are still low in comparative numbers, but when you're growing at that effect, it makes you pay attention. Not only are we up against it in a the religious aspect, we're also up against it with certain moral and social challenges. Our government has brought in laws that are very unfavourable to Christianity. They've legalised homosexuality. Prostitution has been legalised as being a legitimate occupation. They've lowered the age of consent for physical intimacy to 16. They've lowered the drinking age, the legal drinking age, to 18. They've brought a law called an anti-smacking law, which means parents are supposedly not allowed to use this form of discipline. And so good parents are being considered lawbreakers if they choose to exercise this form of discipline in their homes. A girl of any age can go into a doctor's office and request contraceptives, can go into a clinic and have an abortion done without parental consent or even parental knowledge. The parents don't even have to be told anything about what's going on if the young girl doesn't want them to know. And so parents are being left completely in the dark, and young girls are being harmed and damaged in serious ways because of that. Our government introduced what's called a civil union, which means couples who simply want to live together without being married get the same rights and privileges of those who are married. Also, New Zealand was one of the first countries to redefine marriage. No longer in New Zealand is marriage considered exclusively a union between a man and a woman. Now, those of the same gender can form a union and that be considered marriage. And as you might expect, with these kind of laws that are being brought in, there are going to be some negative consequences. And these following statistics will show you the negative consequences. Back in 2010, 49% of children were born to unmarried couples. In 2013, 25% of all couples were simply living together. The reason why some of these dates are a bit not quite as recent as I would have liked, because certain terms are being redefined and have kind of been watered down and mingled together, it's kind of hard to get hard and fast figures as to who's living together and what kind of union that they are in. Almost 50% of New Zealand marriages end in divorce. And of all the marriages in 2013, almost a third of them were remarriages. Chances are there could be a possibility that some of them were legitimate remarriages in the sense that they were following a biblical reasons for remarriage, but to be honest, I doubt that very many of them would be of a scriptural nature. And so you can see that, when these kind of laws are put in place, the moral and social aspects of a country are going to be in decline. And so you can kind of see the kind of things that we are up against it when we're, if we do get to study with people, the kind of baggage that we're having to negotiate as we go through these things. Despite these challenges, despite the difficulties, we're going to continue on striving on. And I would like to think that we'd again be imitators of Paul when he was writing to the Thessalonians. He would say, look, you guys know, you know, brethren, of the our coming to you was not in vain. That when we came to you, we had the boldness to speak God's message to you despite the opposition. In the amidst great opposition, they were going to preach God's word regardless. And so I would like to think that in Palmerston North, we're going to continue on teaching the gospel and teaching the truth and speaking out against these things as we have opportunity, and doing it regardless of what other people might believe about it. Despite the difficulties, we have been able to see good things happen. We've had 10 baptisms since our last visit. And they are few and far between, but when we do have one, it's a time of great rejoicing in New Zealand. And you see some evidence there of occasions where we have been able to witness someone be baptized into the church, into the faith, into Christ. These are some of our new converts that have been brought about through the works of evangelism. The couple at the bottom there, David and Jackie Pamata, were converted during our recent campaign earlier on in the year. And they've just really added a real new dynamic to the congregation. They're fitted right on in, and they're a lovely couple, and they're excited. And we're hoping that through them there'll be some open doors through their family and relatives as well. These charts show you our congregational figures. It shows you our average weekly attendance, also the total congregation. Right now the congregation is numbering about 62 when we left. And you might be looking at those charts and you're thinking, man, really there hasn't been a whole lot of progress here. At best it's kind of sideways movement. But I think there are some things that you need to be aware of, and there's a few notes there on the right-hand side of the screen, that in the last 8 years, we've had 84 people either moved away, fell away, or passed away. And that makes a big dent in the congregation when that happens. If less than 50% of those individuals stayed with the congregation, we'd have a congregation that would be over 100. And a lot of those who have left the congregation are now attending other congregations, and because of the strength of faith they've developed in Palmerston North, they've been able to strengthen the congregations that they have gone to. There's a congregation that has been planted 30 minutes away from us in Palmerston North in a town called Foxton that 15 or 20 members are meeting down there, that ordinarily would have been meeting in Palmerston North, but are now meeting a good need down in that town. And so even though the numbers may not reflect the kind of work and progress and positive influence that we've had in Palmerston North, I think when you see those other things that have been going on, it does reflect that the influence that we've had from the congregation is not just in Palmerston North, but has been spreading far and wide as throughout the country. And you might be looking at those figures and you might be thinking, well, you know, why can't we have more converts? I wish the numbers were, that the congregations were bigger and that we've had more baptisms. I wish we could see more people being converted. Why is it that we're not, and we might get all discouraged and think, well, what's going on? But I think we need to ask ourselves the question, what is our primary task as Christians? What is our primary task as the Lord's church? Let me tell you now, it's not to baptize or convert anyone. That is not our primary task as Christians. And you may be thinking, well, man, that's just crazy. How in the world can you even be saying that? Well, let me make a scriptural case for what I'm saying here. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 17, Paul said, look, the Lord didn't send me to baptize but to preach. It wasn't that Paul was saying that baptism was unimportant. What he was saying is that his primary mission was to preach the gospel. In the next passage there in Acts 16, when Paul was in Philippi. He came across Lydia, and it says a certain woman named Lydia was listening, and the Lord opened her heart to respond to the things spoken by Paul. And when she and her household had been baptized. And so we see here that we're not trying to dismiss baptism, because Lydia and her household were baptized. But what was Lydia's role in this process? Well, her role was to respond to the message. What was the Lord's role in this process? Well, the Lord's role was to open her heart. What was Paul's mission? What was Paul's role in the conversion of Lydia? His role was simply to speak the word. That's all that Paul did. He wasn't responsible for causing her to respond. He wasn't responsible for having her heart change its ways. 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 8, Paul would write there that, you know, I planted, Apollos watered. Who was causing the growth? Not Paul and Apollos. It was God who was causing the growth. And so when it comes down to it, our primary task is to sow the seed, is to evangelize, is to get the message out into the community, is to give people opportunities, is to give people chances. That's all that God expects us to do. The rest is down to God himself and to the receptive and willing hearts of those who we speak to. And so as 1 Thessalonians 2 and verse 13 would say, and for this reason, Paul was going to constantly thank God. Why? Because they received the word from Paul and his co-workers, and that they received God's message. And they received it not as man's message, but as coming from God, as being God's message, as being God's word, and that it was performing its work in them. And so what was the Thessalonians' part of the process? Well, they had to receive the message. What was God's part? Well, God was working in them through the word. What was Paul's role? Paul's role was to share to them the message. And so what I'm trying to say is that our task is simply to give opportunities. And if we see church growth, if we see baptisms, that's a bonus for our labors. And that really comes down to that. That's God's part of the work. Our work is to sow the seed, is to give people chances. And I assure you that in Palmerston North, we've been sowing the seed as best we can. We have had two minor outreach campaigns. We've had one major outreach campaign, which I alluded to earlier on this year. We have letterboxed over 29,000 pieces of material. We've knocked on 2,500 doors at least. We've hosted four community-invited events and Bible seminars. We've had dozens of home Bible studies and sent out Bible correspondence courses. We've increased our benevolence in the community. We've set up a website so people can see us online. And so these are just some of the things that we've been doing to sow the seed, to give people a chance, and to invite them to get into God's word, and hopefully eventually become members of the church and have heaven as their eventual home. So that was our external focus of our work and our outreach, trying to reach out to the community in evangelistic ways. But we also want to make sure that we have an internal focus, that we are teaching and encouraging and building the faith of those who are in the church, who are already brethren. And of course, we're going to utilize good, sound teaching. Teaching sound doctrine from the scriptures, and make sure that we are grounding individuals in the word. And we'll teach sermons, we'll teach classes. The men, a variety of men, are involved in doing that. We encourage them to play a part in teaching and preaching. We give handouts that people can take home that they can study at home. We'll utilize various teaching books to help us in these classes. We really try to promote good family network and family fellowship within the congregation, that we get together and spend time in one another's homes, spend time engaging in fun activities together, so we can build the unity, we can build the love, and we can really be a strong knit congregation. And I think it's really, really important that we spend time in one another's homes and invite people to your homes, have meals together. That's where you can really get to know people, and People open up, more so in this kind of setting. When you're in a casual setting, people will open up a whole lot better. And I would encourage you as a congregation, if you're not doing it on a regular basis, that you start doing it. Get people into your homes, not just the people that you know, but people that you don't know. The people on this side of the auditorium, get them to come into your home. Go to people's homes, and you will really build a strength within the congregation. One of the things that we do on an annually in Palmerston North is to host a ladies' challenge. This is where ladies come from through all over the country to gather together, and they'll have a retreat together and encourage one another with good lady-focused lessons. And it's a really it's one of the best aspects of the work in Palmerston North. This is our current leadership team. We've got some men here who are really growing in their faith, growing in their confidence as leaders. And we're a young leadership. I'm 42 and I'm the second oldest. But we've got individuals here that I think have great potential to be elders in the future, and we're really working towards that. We're elders in training. And so I'm hoping that in the years to come, that at least some of these guys will form an eldership in the future. One of the things that I really want you to be aware of is that we are working hard, and that your support of us is not in vain. Our labours and our toil is not in vain. And I guess the same things could be said for you. If you are working hard for the Lord here in Maryville, your work is not in vain. You are achieving good things. And the Lord will cause the increase. He will cause good things to happen. Galatians 6 and verse 9, don't grow weary in well-doing, for in due time the harvest will come. And I believe the Lord will achieve a harvest in Palmerston North and continue to do that. And I would encourage you to continue to play your part in our efforts. And on behalf of the congregation in Palmerston North, they greet you, they thank you. We make sure that they are well aware of congregations like yourself, that you are playing a part in our work. And they know that our work wouldn't be as effective without your assistance. We tell them that. And so they know that we're over here to give thanks on their behalf to you. And so the congregation is very, very appreciative of the part that you play. And just finally, on behalf of my family, let me again thank you. We love you, and we know that you love us. We hope that you'll spend a bit of time getting to know us while we're here. It's only a brief time, but hopefully you'll get to know us. Please ask any questions of our work that you would like. If you had struggles understanding my accent and you couldn't understand a lick of what I was saying, there is a presentation board out in the foyer. You can read it out there. The Mission Committee has copies of those presentation sheets, that if you want to get more details, they will give you copies of the information. I would encourage you, if you're not already receiving our newsletter directly, before you leave tonight, either give Rachel or myself a copy of your email address, and I'll make sure I add you to the list so you can receive updates every 2 months or so of what we're doing in New Zealand, in Palmerston North. And so I really do thank you for your attention today. Before I finish, I want to make sure that you are encouraged as Christians. If you've been struggling in your faith, if you've been struggling as a Christian, maybe you haven't been doing the outreach that you need to be doing. Maybe you haven't been sharing the faith as you should have been. Maybe you've been struggling in your faith. Let the brethren here know. I believe that a congregation ought to be a family, and in families we share our struggles. And if you have been struggling, let the brethren here know. Let them pray for you. If you've committed a public sin, confess it publicly. It may be difficult to do, but boy, it'll be a weight off your shoulders, and you'll have a whole team of people that can help you through it. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, man, hopefully some of what you've seen here tonight might have motivated you to start looking into some of the looking into Christianity, that you'll be motivated to look into the scriptures, to sit down and have a Bible study with someone here who's in this room, and that they can show you from God's word the steps that you need to take to have your soul secure, to have your past mistakes washed away, that you can live the rest of your life in spiritual confidence, that should the Lord come tonight, should the Lord come at an unexpected time, that you don't need to worry, that you can go to sleep this night with your soul secure. Please don't put it off until it's too late. If you have a need of any of these things of this nature, please come and let us know as we stand and sing. Thank you.